issues, etc. What does this mean? We want to hear from you. Why do you listen? How has it helped you? What are your favorite topics? Who are your favorite guests? And what makes Issues Etc. unique? Please leave your thoughts about this worldwide outreach on the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Be sure to give us your first name and tell us where you're from. Issues Etc. What does this mean? 618-223-8382.
As Christians, my family and I remember the incredible sacrifice Jesus made for each and every one of us, how he took on the sins of the world and extended the gift of salvation. And we recommit ourselves to following his example here on earth.
The problem here is that who cares what his opinion is? Our opinions do not rise to the level of Christian doctrine.
Satan has always been a used car salesman. He'll always want to sell you something that cannot happen and that will not work.
Hi, this is Eric, and I'm a steelworker from Pittsburgh, PA. With some noise reduction headphones and the new iPhone app, I listen to Issues Etc. all day long.
They recently held the very first March for Marriage in Washington, D.C. Of course, the occasion is obvious. Last week during Holy Week, I had the whole week off, and I sat there watching the coverage of the Supreme Court considering two very weighty decisions, really one question and two decisions, and no one knows how the court is really going to actually vote and decide until that decision comes out some months hence. But we are obviously sitting here at a crossroads of history, one way or the other, on the issue of marriage. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live this Tuesday afternoon. It's the 2nd of April. Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse joins us for the first few minutes to talk about last week's March for Marriage in D.C. and the Supreme Court's same-sex marriage decisions. And then we'll talk about the Easter season, not the day, but the season of Easter, with Pastor Heath Curtis. Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse is founding president of the Ruth Institute, based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she is author of the books Smart Sex and Love and Economics. Jennifer, welcome back.
Hi, Todd.
You spoke briefly at the March for Marriage in D.C., and in your speech, you saw a parallel between the March for Marriage and the March for Life in the next generation, so to speak. What was it?
Well, you know, we hear this idea that all the young people are against us and that all the young people believe gay marriage is the wave of the future and, you know, get on the right side of history, get with the program. You know, we hear this over and over and over again. And I just pointed out that 40 years ago, the Supreme Court, you know, handed down its Roe versus Wade decision. And that's exactly what people said about abortion, you know, that young people all believe in it. They'll grow up being completely familiar with it, not knowing of anything else. And we just have to wait for all the old fuddy-duddies to die off, and abortion will be no big deal in the whole society. Well, of course, that turned out to be completely false, that young people are more pro-life than their parents. And I'm predicting that the same thing will happen with the marriage issue, too, in the unfortunate event that we lose these Supreme Court cases and end up having to actually run the experiment. It takes a while, it took a while, for the full brutality of the abortion regime to become obvious. But after 40 years, it is quite obvious that it is a brutal regime in many, many respects, and it has many disruptive effects on society. And young people have intuited that abortion sets aside the interests of children for the benefit and convenience of adults. That's, you know, young people see that, and that's why young people are pro-life in greater numbers than their parents. And, you know, the March for Life every year, any March for Life you go to, any pro-life rally that you go to, you know, the average age will be somewhere in the teens. You know, I was at the one in San Francisco. There in D.C., there were 500,000 people there, and the average age is, you know, 17 or something, you know. And so young people have intuited that this is not in their interest. And I think that as time goes on and the rhetoric dies down, and this this whole stampede that we're in, this whole mob mentality that we're in the middle of right now, saying it's inevitable, you know, get on the right side of history. As things calm down and the thing has its opportunity to work its way through society, people will come to see that removing the gender requirement from marriage is, in fact, a huge deal. It's not a small deal. And, in fact, it's something that, again, sets aside the interests of children for the benefit of adults. And I think that will just, as time goes on, it will become more and more obvious. Right now, you can't expect a high school student to think through what 40 years' worth of social policy is going to look like, you know. As those 40 years roll on, I think it's going to be perfectly obvious that man-woman marriage is the right side of history, and redefining marriage is just one more disastrous step of the sexual revolution.
Let's talk a bit about the Supreme Court decisions, not so much because the decisions haven't been made, but what I'm curious about, especially with regard to the Prop 8 case that the Supreme Court is considering, I guess as often as you and I have talked about it, I need a little bit of a refresher because I found myself confused as to, you know, why it was initially brought, how it ended up at the Supreme Court. Can you give us the quick history on Prop 8 from California?
Sure, I can give you the quick history of Prop 8 is that the voters of California passed Prop 8. That's the first thing you have to remember, is that 7 million California voters voted yes to support man-woman marriage. More people voted yes on Prop 8 than who voted for the Republican candidate in 2008. Let's keep that in mind. That means a lot of Democrats voted yes on Prop 8. So the first thing about Prop 8 is that it won and that it is still controlling law in the state of California. Immediately after that, a group of people decided to get together and challenge Proposition 8 in the courts. It went absolutely nowhere at the state level court because the state Supreme Court had to say, you know, if the people want to amend the state constitution, they can amend the state constitution. There was basically nothing there at the state level. And so now the same group of people have put a lot of money on the table. Actor Rob Reiner has been one of the big funders of the Prop 8 case. And they put a lot of money on the table to drive this through the federal courts. And the challenge to Proposition 8 was called Perry versus Schwarzenegger because Arnold Schwarzenegger was the governor of California at that time. Now the governor is Jerry Brown, so the new case got called Perry versus Schwarzenegger. First it was Perry versus Schwarzenegger, then it's Perry versus Brown. And those were cases where this group of gay activists were challenging the law of the state of California, namely Proposition 8, and saying it was unconstitutional under federal law. Well, they won in the federal district court, which was Judge Vaughn Walker's courtroom, which we've talked about numerous times, a guy who obviously should have recused himself, in my opinion. He should have recused himself. His self-interest in the case has become more apparent as time has gone on. And then again, it won. Their challenge won in the Ninth Circuit court, federal court, and that is Judge Stephen Reinhardt's courtroom. And the Ninth Circuit Court, as people probably know, is one of the most liberal courts in the nation, the court that is probably the most overturned by the Supreme Court than any other of the court, comparable courts. So at that point, the case was called, Perry versus Brown, and the people on our side, the proponents of Proposition 8, then challenged that. They are appealing that ruling. And so when we appeal a ruling, the name of the case changes to now Hollingsworth versus Perry. So Dennis Hollingsworth is the one of the official proponents of Proposition 8, and so he now is the named plaintiff in the case, and that's the way in which it's come under the jurisdiction of the U.S. Supreme Court. So it's now called Hollingsworth versus Perry, and whatever the court rules in the end, that will be the name of the case that will go down in history. It, like Roe versus Wade, it'll be Hollingsworth versus Perry. And so that's where we are now. The court heard oral arguments a week ago today. I was not in the courtroom. A few of our people were in the courtroom. John Eastman, who is the chairman of the board of the National Organization for Marriage, he was in the courtroom. A couple of other friends of mine were in the courtroom. And I would have to say our side is guardedly optimistic. In spite of all the noise that you hear in the media is actually completely legally irrelevant. I don't know if the media realizes that they are legally irrelevant. The Supreme Court does not have to notice them. You know, they don't have any standing at all in the Supreme Court. The court has to decide based on the law, you know. Based on the questioning, some of the people on our side are guardedly optimistic, and we'll just have to see what the court finally decides to do in June.
With only a minute here, and no more than a minute, Jennifer, make your case again that however the court decides, however the course of this goes, 40 years from now, natural marriage, man-woman marriage, will be seen, especially by those young people then, as the right side of history. 1 minute.
Well, because what will happen, the inevitable result of redefining marriage will be that that the biological basis of parenthood is going to be overwritten by the legal construction and reconstruction and deconstruction of parenthood. And so children will have three legal parents. Some children will have maybe four legal parents. Some children will have no legally recognized right to know who one of their parents is, one of their biological parents. The state will make a policy in some cases of coming between a child and their natural parent, a parent who has done nothing wrong, a parent who is perfectly fit. Those things will become the policy of the nation. And so, therefore, parenthood will no longer be a natural reality, but strictly a legally and socially constructed reality. And that means it will not be strong enough and sturdy enough to do what children need for parents or the institution of parenthood to do for them. And we'll have many more children wounded by the misbehavior of adults. And it won't just be gay adults. You know, let me emphasize.
About 20 seconds here.
When you deconstruct parenthood, it's going to affect everybody, not just people who happen to contract a same-sex union. So it's a much bigger thing than anybody's given credit for, Todd.
Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse is founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities. She's author of the book Smart Sex and Love in Economics. You'll find more about the Ruth Institute at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Thanks, Jennifer.
You're welcome, Todd.
When we come back, we're going to talk about the season of Easter. Pastor Heath Curtis will be our guest. Stay tuned. More Issues, Etc. right after this.
Did you know that we send out an email each week that details upcoming show topics? It's available for you to include in your weekly church bulletin. Just click the logo for the Issues Etc. Journal and Weekly Bulletin insert at issuesetc.org and sign up to receive the Church Bulletin blurb. It's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen to Issues Etc. issuesetc.org, look for the Issues Etc. Journal logo, and register to receive a weekly bulletin paragraph from Issues Etc.
When someone asks you, what do you believe as a Christian, how do you respond? Do you have a confession of faith? I've written an article in the latest Issues Etc. Journal titled, I Believe. You can read it by subscribing to the Issues Etc. Journal. Just look for the subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Mark Hemingway answers the question, Why Lutheranism? With Why Not? Subscribe to the online Issues Etc. Journal, issuesetc.org.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Pastor Miller of Trinity Lutheran Church in Bay Ridge. We preach, teach, and confess the historic Catholic faith. For a refuge from the pop spirituality and shallow preaching that swirls about in our day, come to our haven at 9020 3rd Avenue in Brooklyn. In addition to Mrs. Solano's Sunday School at 9:30, we have liturgy at 11 a.m., followed by a fellowship meal and Bible study after the service. You're invited to come and be a part of Trinity, a biblical and sacramental church. Visit trinitybayridge.org.
Hi, this is Jonathan Collin from France.
Thanks to God's gift of the Internet, people are listening to Issues Etc. around the world.
First, I would like to say thank you very much for your program. It very much ministers to those of us who are outside the comforts and the luxuries of having a confessional Lutheran congregation nearby. Thank you very much for this great resource.
Listen to what you want, when you want, wherever you are. Issuesetc.org.